This is Limit Up, the place where we explore markets, strategies, and trading psychology to take your trading to the next level.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome to the Limit Up podcast presented by Top Step Trader. This is the show where we talk about markets, futures, forex, and trading psychology with some of the best in the industry. Yes, the best. I'm Jack Pelzer, not currently one of the best, but getting better each day. We have an epic interview for you today between Jeff and Mr. Alan Matthew. Alan is the CEO and Managing Director of Tribal Ventures LLC. He spent over two decades trading all sorts of products down at the Chicago Board of Trade. He's also been to every Burning Man festival since 2004 and has practiced as a shamanic healer after learning from several shamans down in the Amazon, which brings me to an important point. This episode today may include some subject matter which may not be appropriate for everyone. Our analytics show that many children are not listening to this show, but for the sake of transparency, I figured we'd just get that out there. We tried to edit some things down, but let's just say there might be some language that you wouldn't want to use in front of the Queen. That being said, I got to sit down with Alan before the episode, and as was once said in Ferris Bueller, he's one righteous dude. Honestly, I think you're going to find this episode quite interesting. I mean, most of you listening are traders, so I don't think too many people will deem too many of these things problematic. But if there are, certainly let us know in the comments. So what do you say? Are you ready to stir up some controversy Howard Stern style? Not yet, because first we're going to check in with the always wholesome Mark Meadows for this week's market reaction.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. You have a market bias, and the market is tempting you to put on a position. But it's a little early. You know if you do, the market can continue to move against you before it hits the next technical point of support or resistance. As it moves against you, you fall into this trap of convincing yourself that you're not wrong just early. If you wait and the market moves the direction you foresaw, you'll get hit with this FOMO. I knew it, you exclaim as you count your would-be profits. So what do you do? This is something that I've struggled with my entire trading career. I still jump into positions early. Earlier than I know I should. I did it in a euro-dollar trade this week, selling as the price broke higher, only to watch my position go 25 pips out of the money and close to my 30-pip stop. Fortunately, I was going with the long-term trend and the price reversed so that I ultimately made money. And while the trade itself was valid, the entry point was awful. I got in based on fear that I would miss the move lower. And fear is a terrible place to trade from. So this week, the market reaction is meant to hold myself accountable and potentially offer an idea for those of you out there that may struggle and do the same thing. Put in an order instead. If you put an order on, you are trading. Often, you can pick a point, say 10 ticks away, and turn that pain you would have experienced into positive P&L. Heck, even less of a loss is positive P&L. If you miss the move, try to forget about it, or at least bring to your mind all those times you were stopped out from entering a trade too early. That's what I'll be doing. I hope you'll join me. And that's your market reaction.
Thank you, Mark. Listeners, prepare yourself to venture down the rabbit hole. Jeff today is talking to Alan Matthew, a man who is many things, most notably a trader and shamanic healer. I could add more, but honestly, what's the point? Jeff, take it away.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Limit Up podcast. My name is Jeff Carter. I blog at pointsandfigures.com. You can find me on Twitter at pointsandfigures. Thank Top Step Trader for hosting us. And today my guest is Alan Matthew. Alan is an old friend of mine. He was a trader in the wheat pit.
Soybeans.
He's a Board of Trade guy. I was a Merck guy. And then he became an angel investor, and he's done a lot of other things in his life that I think you will find very interesting. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Well, thank you, Jeff. And I'd like to begin by saying this is pretty impressive company here, this Top Step Trader. We were talking earlier. I met them, I think, 5 years ago when they had an office on the lower floor in this building. But this is, I think they're doing quite well, so to speak. It's really nice here.
It's kind of an interesting thing. Like, we knew people that backed traders on the floor. Like, when you started, somebody backed you.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. Yeah. Somebody backed me.
Yeah.
But they were tangible. Like if you saw somebody going off the handle, you could grab them by the neck and pull them out of the pit and say, you're done.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you get your start on the floor?
I was taking post-grad work at Roosevelt University. And my last semester in college, I was going to art class at midnight or 1 a.m. And there was a woman there, and I had read an article about the Board of Trade.
Wow.
You know, in the Sunday paper. And I just decided that I was going to go check it out.
What year was this?
Probably 1974, 73, 74. And she goes, well, hey, I know this guy, Pat Arbor. And, you know, if you get down there, just tell him, you know, that I sent you.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. I showed up on the, you know, at the door to the fourth floor, and they called him in. So
that's funny. Yeah, and they used to do that, like they would page people and then
you'd
walk.
right
on the Merck floor after Anthony Spilotro got killed. They were paging him all the time.
Oh,
it was really
funny. Yeah. We had a few of those too.
So you started clerking for Pat?
No, he got me a job with Mayor Gilbert Leslie. I don't know if Leslie was a big name back then.
No.
He actually had a farm report. So he would send before the government started. He had a competing one. So he had thousands of farmers that would send in their planting intentions.
Wow.
So that was a big, commission draw for the company.
That's interesting. My first job was with Stotler.
Oh, right. Sure. So I knew those
running
guys. Yeah.
It's always interesting to me how people get to the floor. I traded with Arbor's kid, Mike.
Oh, right.
He came to the Merck.
Oh.
And then, weirder still is his partner. Did you ever know Ben Rose?
No.
So I guess he was a partner with Hank Shatkin and Pat. And his daughter and I are really good friends now.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Small world.
Trading is a totally small world. Totally small world. So you went and you clerked, and it says here that Arbor got in a fist fight or something?
Yeah, I think I was on Tasty Trade and told that story.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, that was the first time I met him.
Right? And he was a boxer.
Was he? Yeah.
He and Jack Sander both were boxers.
Yeah. But, I mean, he had the guy by the neck. I won't say the guy's name, but he wasn't the first one to go after this guy.
No,
so.
No. So do you remember when you got your membership, what they were trading for?
It's a really funny question.
Yeah.
It was probably, I got one under Continental. I was the Continental soybean futures
trader. That's a whole different
story. That's a different story.
Continental,
Yeah. So they were around 360 forever. They were in that mid 300s, just for absolute ever.
Right. Right. And that was, and then who did your bank loan?
We can go down another path here,
right?
Because you read all this and you hear people say, you're not supposed to keep score. Well, if somebody does something nice for me, I'm keeping score.
Right.
That guy, I'm going to respect him.
And you were a broker, right?
No.
You were a broker or you were a trader?
Well,
did you fill any paper?
I filled paper when I worked for Conti. I worked for Conti. Not all Conti bought me away.
Got it.
I pissed off a lot of brokers by going in the pit and doing it myself.
Yeah.
But that's what this guy wanted. I worked for, a pretty big, money manager type guy.
Oh, I got it. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they were always right around 360. And Hank Shatkin gave me half. And Keith Bronstein gave me half.
Wow. No
100%
bank loan.
No bank. Well, Hank guaranteed,
sure.
The bank. But it was like two guys, so I paid him off.
That's like Harry the Hat was this famous broker on the floor of the Merck, and when his bosses left town, he went and lied to the bank. They gave him a loan and he bought a seat.
Jesus Christ.
You had to be a little bit ballsy, and that just kind of shows.
Yeah.
We talk about entrepreneurs today being ballsy. Well, that's kind of the first bastion of entrepreneurship was down on the trading floor.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And the thing that I miss is the transparency of it all.
Yeah.
And that's the conundrum with angel investing or investing
anything
at all.
Yeah, just being out in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this wacko that ran that one drop of blood thing. What was that?
Oh, Elizabeth Theranos.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I mean, what a... So multiply that by, you know, she was the top of the, you know, the pyramid, but, you know, at the bottom of the pyramid, there's
totally
just
scammers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you guys did, but, you know, every pit had a different culture.
For real.
and it's kind of funny because when you're trading, and I talked about this with Michael Patek, who started this, like, he started in the Dow Jones pit. And I'm like, how did you pick that? And he just sort of fit his personality. And, you know, soybeans was not like wheat. And so the personalities were different and the pit culture was different.
Yeah.
And so, like, in the hogs, where I finished my career, it was very different than the Eurodollars, much smaller community. And when somebody did something in the hogs, it was loud.
Yeah.
And people called them out and they ran them out of there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there were guys like that would want to move from, let's say they want to move from the currencies or S&Ps or something into the hogs. And they'd say, no, you can't come in here.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Right.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, again, not politically correct.
No.
When we put their arm around you and said, you know, can you fill out the hurt feelings report?
Yeah, right. Can you tell? I want to go there. I got to go to the arbitration committee. Yeah. The arbitration committee had shut you down.
Yeah.
It was totally crazy.
So how do you, you know, how do you translate, you know, decades of that into, you know, making an investment,
right?
That pays out.
Right.
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 And so so what is it? And, you know, this sort of soapbox mantra, it's all about the people. And it's that simple.
Yeah.
It's absolutely that simple.
It is. How do you keep your mind together? So I think one of the things about trading is it's such a mental game. You know, yeah, the numbers and stuff, but how do you keep your head together when different things happen?
Well, you know, me, right?
Yeah.
But I've just had a, whatever it is, an Explorers, you know, when I was 7 or 8, I would get up early and ride my bike around Waukegan before anybody was up. I mean, you know, nobody worried about, you know, whatever, you know, child, whatever. And so I've traveled a lot, and it's mostly been serendipity, the connections I've made, and there's some, you know, ambassadors, finance, whatever. I mean, you know, some pretty interesting people. And I really enjoyed the time, this is, you know, pre-cell phone and GPS and all that, where you're really, like, off the grid.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
You're really off the grid.
Right.
And, you know, combine that with a couple ounces of ayahuasca in the middle of the Amazon.
Yeah.
And now you're really, really off the grid.
Right.
And so I've always been attracted to, I guess, getting a new perspective because it's, you know, you can just, it's the same shit. I mean, if you go back decades, I mean, just do this, you know, look at headlines for decades.
Right.
It's the same shit. There's a currency issue here. Mm-hmm. Argentina's in debt. I mean, it's the same.
Right.
And so how do you bring something new, you know, and create change?
Yeah.
You know, my mother said I was born old, you know,
and
old. So whatever you call those old souls or whatever.
Right.
I think a time out is good.
Yeah, time away.
Yeah, time away.
So if you got into a bad streak trading, you'd go for a walk, you'd go away.
One time, I don't know whether it was like a Thursday or something, I lost a chunk of money. And then I got on a plane and went to London.
Yeah.
That afternoon.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm leaving, you know?
Why London? Why did you just choose
know.
London?
I don't know. Oh, I probably went to go look at the trading floor there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. So could you say what your worst day was and your best day? Is that, do you want that to be in the public realm or not? And it's funny, like, I don't remember my best day, but I remember my worst day like it was yesterday. The losses sting worse than the gains.
Jeff, this is where, in a lot of times in my life where I've lost people. Right?
Yeah.
So I'll go with the story, right? And you say, well, is that real? Is it not real? Mm-hmm, but it's a story.
Right.
And, you know, I was in Hanoi January 1st. I forget what the year is. I was probably 09. And I was, like everybody on the floor, we had all this stock, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it had closed at like 700. And
714.
714.
I was in Singapore.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, and I had a dream showing me that the price went to 399. And I didn't act. And yeah. That costs about $5 million.
Right. Right.
And I had reached out to friends, and I, you know, there's a great moral here for me, yeah. right? And I think you can expand on it yeah. for humanity, but you have to listen to your dreams.
You do. Yeah, sort of. I mean, yeah, I remember, I'll never forget, I looked at that close, and I looked at my wife, and I said, well, if we sold now, we'd never have to work a day again. And then I rode that son of a bitch all the way down to 155.
Oh, ouch. ouch.
And then today, of course.
Today, it's just yeah, killing it.
You're killing it. But yeah. it's interesting. Like, I remember once I had a trade on, and this is before there were 24/7 trading, right? And so the pits would be open. Like, the grain pits were, I think, 9:30 to 1:15.
Yeah.
The hog pit was, you know, 9:05 to 1.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they tried 720.
Bonds were 8. But, yeah. Eurodollars were 720 to 2. Mm. Bonds closed at 2. S&Ps were 8:30 to 3:15. And these are all central times, mm-hmm. so if mm-hmm. anybody mm-hmm. listening. And in the U.S. And so at 2, markets closed.
Yeah.
And I was trading Eurodollars. I had these, had like a front to red spread on and not a few.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I knew where I wanted to get out. And so Singapore opened at 6:15 or something like that. So I called and I said, hey, I want to put an order in, like, you know, March, red March, sell whatever at this price. And at like 2 a.m, I woke up and my wife goes, what's going on? And I said, I just got filled.
Oh.
And then the phone rang and I picked it up and they go, you're filled. And I was like, whoa, that's spooky.
Yeah, it's out there. You
yeah.
know
so you
it's
do have
there.
To follow your gut sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Your gut can tell you a lot of stuff in investing. So we got so much to talk about. What tell me about this shaman thing. How did you get involved with that? And what is that all about?
Yeah.
Because people don't know. Alan is a shaman, right? Can I say that?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you went to the Amazon, and how were you first exposed to that?
It's, again, it's total serendipity. I was in the Iquitos, and this is 25 years ago.
Right.
And it was a pretty wacky town then. It's still wacky, mm-hmm. but, you know, they've got paved roads now.
Yeah. That's always
anyways,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, cement's a good thing.
Yeah, right. It is. And the Amazon's growing like, it's
yeah.
just gangbusters. But anyways, and I was at dinner, and there were like 10 people. There was a British guy that I had met, and I was with my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at the end of the table. They're all speaking Spanish. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And he goes, hey, Alan, he goes, the man sitting next to you is a powerful shaman, and he's headed home. But if we pay him, you know, some money, he'll come up the river with us, and we can do a ceremony. And I'm like, sure. You know, like, I had no idea what I was doing.
What makes a powerful shaman compared to impowerful? Unpowerful?
Yeah, well, you know, let's, you know, do you want to draw analogies to, you know, startup wizards? You know, it's like, here's the thing. When I started doing it, right, nobody knew what it was. I mean, and you know, I would tell people about it and they'd literally turn and walk away.
Right.
And now the crazy, you know, it's just nuts. Now I have people sending me emails or, you know, hey, can you tell me about how we do a ceremony?
Yeah.
So, you know, so the non-powerful shaman is the guy who's done it 5 times in a yoga studio
yeah,
here in
right.
Chicago. And
right.
he's going to lecture me on like what it's all about.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stick your own skin in the game.
Right. Yeah.
So you went and did that. And yeah. now you go down and how often do you go down to the Amazon
well,
and do that whole thing?
This tells you how involved that was. So, you know, I'd be on the... I would leave on a Wednesday. I would get into Lima at midnight, and the connecting flights are, you know, in the morning.
Yeah.
Fly out on Thursday to Pulcolpa or right. Iquitos uh-huh. or Puerto Maldonado. And I drink Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, sometimes grab the Sunday plane to be home on the trading floor on Monday. And sometimes I drink on Monday. I do that 3 times a year.
Right.
And that wasn't cheap.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I've also traveled with a Peruvian shaman as kind of like my psychic bodyguard.
Right.
And I pay everything for him.
Right.
So it's times 2 everything we do.
Wow. So what part of that experience do you integrate into your daily practice?
Well,
like I do yoga and there's certain things you do daily that, you know.
You know, you have to own your life.
Okay.
And I think a lot of substances, you know, you can feel good for a while.
Right.
And, but if you're, you know, you don't make the bed or clean your clothes or right. wash the dishes.
Right, right.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Right.
Even though blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I think it's about, it's just, it's about saying to yourself, it's constantly, I took a photo out at Burning Man a few years ago that I've used in a talk. And this camp had built what's called a self-ass kicker. And it had three types of shoes. One was a boot, one was a running shoe, mm-hmm. one was like a dress shoe. And it had this wheel thing with a handle, and you could, you know, turn the handle and kick yourself in the ass.
Yeah.
And for me, ayahuasca is the, it's like a Norton antivirus for your brain.
Right.
I have seen things. I'm like, am I still thinking about that? That took place 7 years ago.
Right.
Let that shit go.
Right, right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right, right.
And there's a lot of people that I think, especially now, because of technology, that people don't, and I've given this analogy, I've shown this before, exponential growth, we don't have a clue.
Right.
We don't have a clue because we don't know what it feels like, what
right.
it feels like. You can tell me that the chips are going to be, you know, this much smaller and you're going to have 10 billion in your phone or 100 billion
right.
in your phone in, you know, so many years. Fine. Great. But what does that mean for humanity? And
right.
I just think one of the resurgence in the, whatever you want to call it, with psilocybin or ayahuasca or mm-hmm. the DMT, I mean, nobody knows what's going on.
Right.
We're so complex.
It's complex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I read. I mean, I read a lot. I mean, I just read a lot. It's personal work.
Yeah. Interesting. I think you do have to let stuff go. It still shapes you.
It does.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it still shapes you, but you do have to let it go. So Burning Man, you mentioned.
Yeah.
You just got back
yeah.
from this
last
edition.
Week. I'm still.
You're still here.
Yeah,
you're
I'm
not
still,
burning.
I'm,
yeah. He's got
yeah.
a little bit of a tan.
Yeah, right.
But when did you first go? And like, what's the deal with Burning Man? I've never been.
Yeah.
An economist this year, Nobel Prize winner Paul Romer went
okay.
and like photographed all the people.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell he's doing, but
yeah.
he's trying to figure it out. I think.
Yeah. I had a photo exhibit this
yeah.
year, two of them out
uh-huh.
at Burning Man.
Wow.
But I look again, serendipity. You know, sorry for the me here,
yeah,
but
yeah.
2004, there was a reporter for the New York Times, and she asked me to go, and I went online, and I read about it, and I said, there's no way. I said, they are not my kind of people.
Right.
I'm not going to go. It's
right.
not for me.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
And how long has it been going? So 2004, how many years had it been going?
That probably about 15.
Oh, really? That
yeah.
long? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about
yeah.
it. That's why I'm asking.
It's 30-some years on.
Oh, geez.
And however, so here was her negotiating point, right?
Yeah.
She said, look, about 2 years before, she and I had flown to Venezuela and we hiked Mount Roraima.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Roraima is the background for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's A Lost World.
Uh-huh.
So she sells a story to the New York Times about her hike. And when she sells it, she tells the editor, you ought to contact Alan. He took a bunch of photos. So they ran. I had the cover of the Sunday section along
yeah.
with another photo, and I think there's six or seven other photos in the article. You know, I got paid. Okay,
right,
fine.
Sure.
Didn't pay for the trip. But anyways, so she says to me, look, I'll write the article. You take the photos, and we'll sell the thing. So, you know, that was my hook.
Right.
And I very distinctly remember, you know, like my first 10 minutes, like walking down the streets, right? I would go, every 10 minutes, I go, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then another time, that's the craziest. And then I had to have
walking
like,
down the streets of Burning Man.
Yeah. And then I had.
And this is in the middle of the desert.
Yeah,
so they've
yeah.
set up like a little village.
No, they create a city.
Yeah.
They create a city with streets and, you know.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so I had a little talk to myself. I said, you got to let go because this is, you know, you're going to be here and you can't every 10 minutes. And it's extremely creative. So I've been going out earlier and earlier. And the thing that draws me back is the people that work.
Mm-hmm.
So for you to come and have your experience, the amount of work and effort and cost that goes into you to, you know, for you to stand on an art car and have your mm-hmm. drink and laugh and mm-hmm. giggle and whatever, it's mind-boggling. I was talking to our camp boss this year, and you know, we're trying to estimate what the value, if you had to put a financial tag on what your, you know, $480 ticket or something right. buys you, it's, I think it's in the hundreds of millions. Wow. Hundreds of millions.
Huh.
I mean, there's
That's
a
crazy.
I have a art car that I just love, and I go over to their camp every yeah. year, called the Mayan Warrior. And this thing is a piece of art. It has a 70,000-watt sound system.
Wow.
It has, like, you know, just kind of close your eyes and think of Vegas. It's got as many lasers as, you know, you can imagine.
Oh, wow.
And it's just killer.
How do they get food and water out there? I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere, right?
That's it. So the thing, again, I appreciate is all the logistics, all the
yeah.
people that do the work. And the organization itself, when you go out there, there's rangers and there's all these, you know, you have, yeah. I have to get from my art car, I have yeah. to get a daytime license and a nighttime license.
Oh, wow.
And this year for day, I think I only waited shy of 2 hours uh-huh. in the sun,
mm-hmm.
right? And
probably not the best for a bald guy like me, but yeah.
No, yeah.
Bald Norwegian yeah. skin.
There's, believe me, there's, you know, hundreds of people waiting in line.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And they get a nighttime license. But all that structure is volunteer.
Yeah. There's no government entity. It's all...
Well, we call them the Borg.
Right.
That's the entity.
But there's no elected... The state of Arizona doesn't... Or wherever this... Is it in Arizona, Nevada?
Nevada.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no government.
Let me tell you, this is the most surveilled piece of property on the planet.
Yeah.
Every organization is out there. You NSA, CIA,
yeah.
FBI, every
but
single one.
But they're not organizing it.
No.
Yeah.
They're observing.
It's like Mardi Gras in New Orleans is not a government organized thing. That's
yeah.
all done by the public.
Yeah.
And the crews.
Yeah.
And they organize the parade route and
yeah.
the parades and who's walking when and
yeah.
all that stuff.
So I do say it's a little bit like Chicago politics.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Oh, is there a lot of bribes and corruption?
No, you don't know. You don't want to get caught doing that. But,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, a pack of American Spirit cigarettes, that can
yeah.
go far out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
prison currency.
Yeah, you know right, right, right. Yeah, I mean, there's a great economic piece, just academically, that you should read. Everybody should read it. It's called The Economics of a POW Camp. And it's
really
this guy, he was British, shot down, and he was an economist, and he wound up in this German POW camp. He was in Stalag Luft 1, and he wrote a paper about what happened. So they would get this currency, quote currency, and it would be the Red Cross packets that would come in, right? So
okay.
they would get these baskets.
Yeah.
And then people would start to trade.
Mm.
And so all of a sudden, a market economy came out of this. And like the Sikhs got their basket, and they didn't eat meat, so it's like,
oh,
and meat's
right.
a valuable commodity, right?
Right, right.
Or
right.
guys that didn't smoke
right.
would sell their
right.
cigarettes for stuff.
Yeah.
And it got so big that this tea stand that needed an accountant to keep track
Jeez.
Of everything. And so they had this, and then these two British officers decided that they needed some regulation. So they regulated it, and the market economy collapsed.
Oh, my God.
But you see it replicated at things like Burning Man and in prison.
Yeah.
You know, cigarettes are a currency or two
yeah.
cans of tuna or stuff where you don't have an actual currency.
Yeah.
But because people are, I believe, are hardwired to want to trade, which
yeah.
made trading so fun.
Yeah.
And they want gains from trade. And so market economies crop up when you have people just organized somewhere. And I think that's why Paul Romer was there checking it out.
I'll have
just
to read
see.
It.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
pretty cool.
Yeah. Look. They have a saying, the playa provides, and I could go on forever mm-hmm. about the synchronicities, the crazy things that you would say, what are the odds of that happening,
right.
and then it happens.
Right.
And so there's all kinds of camps out there. I mean,
yeah.
they'll go from hot dog camp to coffee camp
right.
to, you know, martini camp
right.
to whatever, whatever. And your car breaks down? There's somebody that's got tools.
So you can get anything out there, basically, if you want it.
Well, it's...
I mean, if I wanted a steak,
you'll find
I could find
so,
one.
one of the guys in our camp.
It just costs money.
No money. No barter. It's all gift.
It's all gift.
It's gift economy.
How does that work? I don't understand that. Like, gift economy. Yeah. So do you earn karma points or something?
It's just gifting. I mean, look, yeah, probably karma points for
somebody.
So
if I was going to go there for my first time, what advice would you give me?
I'd give you a lot of advice.
I mean, what should I bring?
Pace yourself. Yeah. No, that's it. It's that simple. Pace yourself.
But what should I bring?
I would bring, think.
Besides sunscreen.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You have to plan for it to be really hot during the day.
Yeah.
You might get caught in a dust storm that it's really fun if it's like 25 or 40 minutes because it's really cool because it's a whiteout.
Right.
I mean, literally, like you don't see something 30 feet in front of you.
Wow.
And it gets kind of really quiet.
Yeah.
And good time to have a smoke.
Yeah.
And then, but if it's 2 or 3 hours, then you're like, oh fuck, this isn't any fun. So plan for that. Plan for nighttime being cold. Mm-hmm. If you want, I mean, if you want, you can figure out. This year, I gave away, this is the swag I forgot to bring you, stainless steel cups, 10-ounce cups with the logo of my pink bunny car on them.
Yeah.
But the key, right, the key, and I thought this through quite a bit, was a carabiner on it. So you can just connect it to a belt loop or something.
Yeah.
And that was a hit.
Interesting.
That was a hit.
And so, like, how do you pack for something like this? Like if I'm going to Florida, I pack, throw a swimsuit in, some flip-flops, I take my bag, right?
Yeah.
If you're packing for Burning Man, what do you, like, what stuff do I need? Do I need clothes? Do I need...
You don't. It just depends on how you want to roll,
right? I guess, yeah. You know what I mean? You want to be naked in a dust storm.
Yeah.
I mean, really...
A lot of nudity.
Like if you, I mean, if you were a first-time person and you're like, I want to go to Burning Man, I just bought my ticket.
Yeah. I would say I would highly advise to connect with a camp.
Yeah.
You know, I've had three. So last year there were three CEOs that I have invested in that were at our camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This year there was one CEO. And then this year I brought out the shaman that I've worked with for 25 years to give him the experience. And, you know, I have to tell you, he...
What did he think? Yeah.
He's still figuring it out. He slept basically for 2 days when he got home.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. And how many days is Burning Man?
It's a week. I went out a week early to help build.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Then at the end, they burn the whole thing down? Or what do they do?
Well, they burn the man on Saturday night. They burn the temple on Sunday night. This year, there were a lot of burns. So people build... There was a structure called Folly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, these towers. So I think one went up 4 stories. And in each one of them, there were rooms that were decorated. And they're, you know... art and sayings. I mean, there was a stage where there were performances. They burned that down. I mean, there were a lot of burns this year.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then most people leave Sunday afternoon or Monday morning. So it's kind of, I don't know, there's an official number. I always throw out sort of like half, you know, Sunday, and then some stay for the temple burn. And then it's like a race. Everybody tries to get out. It took me 4 hours in an RV just to get to the main road. So I was stuck in the Burning Man exit traffic for 4 hours
Holy
in the middle of the night.
Shit. And that's how you get out is you take an RV in. There's no train.
Or no.
Or Uber.
There's the Burning Man bus.
Okay.
That's a very effective way to travel in and out.
Okay.
They don't have to wait in line.
And what airport do you fly into, Vegas or?
Most people fly into Reno. I flew into Sacramento to pick up the RV.
Oh, okay.
There's a guy, an individual, I think it's like his retirement account. Yeah. So he's got 16 of these.
Wow.
And it saves me $15,000 in fees. And I really like the fact that I just pick up the phone and I talk to him if there's anything wrong.
Right.
Except for when cell service goes down out at the
river. And there is no cell service down there?
Yes and no. I mean, most people, some people were able to make calls.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get any text or any email like an email would come in and it had been sent 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And then it would come in and work for 5 minutes and then be out. And then there were, I would say, three Wi-Fi spots where
right.
individuals, you know, had set up a Wi-Fi.
And is it all diesel-generated power, or
there's
nobody's using solar?
Well, actually, there is a Burning Man solar org, and so funny. Every year, the different camps really—I mean—they put a lot of effort into this. Is the creative part? So, like,
or wind, yeah.
But like in our camp, we've got these engineer artists.
Yeah.
And they build, I mean, Michael Kahn in LA built me a pink fur bunny car with 840 LEDs that are computerized,
right.
you know, for at night. And he had, I think, two or three different three-wheel bicycles. One was solar powered. He had another car that had we had three wheels, and they were airplane tires, these big, you know, soft, bubbly things. It was solar powered.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we have a cupcake. You know, we have a tiki bar car.
Yeah.
Occasionally we have a Hoover vacuum cleaner that's like 40 feet tall
right.
come out. We had a ladybug art car this year. So we've got all these toys to play with,
wow.
right?
Yeah. So what's next for you? You've been angeling. You're in how many companies?
A lot.
And some are raising next round capital.
Yeah, we talked
like you're
about
in Spot Hero.
Yeah,
Mark runs a really good company. And then you and I are invested in Open Finance, which is the first platform for trading securitized crypto currency. Or not, that's not, securitized tokens is a better way to put it. And they've got, I think, five or six that they're trading. So interesting. What like floats your boat when somebody comes to ask you for investment?
It's funny. I asked this one guy one time, like, what's the end game here?
Yeah.
And I gave him a chunk of change.
Yeah.
It was a real estate thing, and he's become really successful.
Uh-huh.
Really successful. I'm out.
Yeah.
But his response was, I want the biggest, baddest ass art car out at Burning Man. we just had a big laugh.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that is funny.
I will say, you know, out of respect for Matt Matros, you know, Matt's a real person.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, he's had real success.
Right.
And I had a coffee with him right before I went out to Burning Man. And, you know, he's asking himself that question. And, you know, what is a role now that he can play that benefits,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of us, right?
Right?
That where we all kind of win. And, you know, I think in my heart, that's what I'm looking for. And,
mm-hmm.
but if somebody says, hey, you know, let's build a shovel because it's, you know, works better, let it last longer, gets it done quicker,
right?
And this whole thing of gamifying things, making it fun,
mm-hmm.
so it's not drudgery, whether I'm learning, you know, arithmetic.
Right.
Or, you know, how to use my iPhone.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm
right.
Like, what's that app for?
So, right.
You know, it's, look, like I said, I read a lot. And
mm-hmm.
You have to wake up. And I think part of this ayahuasca shaman experiences is just to assist or be there when somebody wakes up and not be judgmental and protect the energy around them when they
uh-huh.
do that. But, you know, it's not a fair game.
Right.
I mean, you and I know how it works,
right?
We know how it works. And I'm not sure a lot of people really understand that. I mean, even in politics, there's a book called Dark Money. And okay, so, you know, you got a few hundred million or a billion, and you fund this foundation
mm-hmm.
for 50 million, and it puts out all this, you know, whatever crap, and it's a tax write-off to you.
Right.
You get to write it off your taxes.
Right.
Wow, how do I compete with that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know. Does Amazon pay taxes? Does Apple? You know what I mean? I mean, everybody talks about, you know, the personal tax rate and, you know, gifts to the rich or whatever. But seriously, folks, I mean, I appreciate that I can get my, you know, ink delivered, you know, by tonight so I can print a photo for Burning Man. I appreciate that. But at the same time, it's like, it's not a fair game.
What's the last good book that you read?
Well, actually, no, because I read a lot.
So yeah, he's got a look.
I've got a couple. Yeah. I tell you, I had a great time reading. Stephen King wrote a book on writing, and this is years and years ago.
Wow.
And it's in his language. You know what I mean? It's like his conversation with you, and it just was great. So, the four, and this talks about the, the fangs.
F O U R or F O R E?
F O F O U R by Scott Gallo, and
it talks about the fangs.
Yeah, I just finished The Facts and Fears by James Clapper. He ran the NSA. He ran our security apparatus for the United States, and so I appreciate those types of perspectives as to what is going on. And he's, you know, it's his last chapter, and he had to decide whether to write the chapter or not. But he kind of went off on our present government.
Yeah.
And, he's like, look, I mean, you hire us to do this job. We can point exactly, you know, time, date, whatever. Yeah. It's Russia, folks. It was Russia, right?
Yeah.
And then for whatever reason, you know, there's people who go, well, I mean, I don't think it was. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, it's like, are you serious? They're doing their job.
It's interesting, though, because the country is really divided. So on the other side, they'd say that they trumped this whole not trumped.
Yeah.
They made this whole thing up with a phony FISA warrant and all this stuff. Russia only spent $100,000. And which election hasn't Russia tried to interfere in?
Right.
Or the Chinese?
Right.
You could see this 2020 election where the Chinese don't like these tariffs because they're breaking their economy and they may funnel money to the Democrats. They certainly funneled money to Bill Clinton. But the country is divided.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, 100%.
Well, what happened when you and I grew up? I mean, you know, nostalgic is whatever, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to be real careful of it, right?
Yeah, you do.
Look back as a learned lesson instead of, again, you know, my hurt feelings report.
Right.
But, I mean, you and I grew up, I mean, you'd hide under your atomic bomb test, hide under the desk.
Yep,
or, you know.
Yeah,
we had the
atomic bomb drills. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Russia was this and da-da-da-da-da, and it's like, what happened?
Yeah, I
thought we were at least a little bit all in it together.
Yeah.
You know, it was like
it's crazy. Yeah, it's funny. Even like in Chicago, the Board of Trade and Merck had a gigantic rivalry. Hated each other.
Oh right. Oh they.
Yeah,
did.
Hated each other.
And it was so stupid because every firm then had to have two offices.
That's right.
Right, one at the Merck and one at the board.
Right, increase their costs.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, and it wasn't until what 07. I can't remember when the Merck actually bought the Board of Trade, but they cleared the Board of Trade and got rid of the Board of Trade Clearing Corp, and that paved the way for them to come together. So, and I remember being in the boardroom, and they did talk seriously about merging, and that would have been 1999. And then whoever was the elected chairman of the Board of Trade did a deal with Eurex.
Yeah.
And we were like, you guys just signed with the devil and they're going to eat your lunch.
Yeah. That was scary. I was terrified at the time that the doors had closed. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally. So anyway.
We didn't know what we had.
Right. No, it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was unbelievable. Well, great having you on the program
today.
Jeff. I don't want to take up your whole time. You can find Alan on Twitter at what's your Twitter handle?
Oh, geez. Alan Matthew 1.
Where can people find you? Tribal Ventures, for sure.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, I know I should just, you know, I always figure somebody figured out how to get to me that they had to put a little effort into it. Maybe it was worth it.
Yeah, some people come on the podcast to publicize what they're doing. Alan's a friend of mine. He just came on to chit-chat, so he doesn't really care. If you want to meet him, you can find him. He's in Chicago sometimes.
Right.
And sometimes he's not. And if not, we'll try to post a picture of his car.
We could do a ceremony in Peru.
Yeah, yeah. Or we'll try to post a picture of your car from Burning Man, and you can find him there next year. So great having you on the Limit Up podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Take care.
Listeners, thank you for making it all the way to the end of this After Dark episode of the Limit Up podcast presented by Top Step Trader. We'll be back next week with a brand new guest, a brand new market reaction. It's all going to be brand new, though chances are it'll be a guest who probably has gone to Burning Man under a dozen times. That's just my premonition. In the meantime, please let us know what you think in the blog comments, join our exclusive Top Step Trader Facebook community, and please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. so that more people can learn about trading futures and ritual healing. Sounds great? Good? All right. In that case, that's all for me, Jack the Lizard King Pelzer. Hope you keep all those third eyes open and join us next week. Namaste and trade well.
This episode produced by Dante 32. Futures and Forex trading contains substantial risk and is not for every investor. An investor could potentially lose all or more than their initial investment. Risk capital is money that can be lost without jeopardizing one's financial security or lifestyle. Only risk capital should be used for trading, and only those with sufficient risk capital should consider trading. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future results.